remember about 5 years ago having lunch in LA, and it was me, Jackie Beat, Coco, and Varla. And we were looking at each other like, what the fuck are we going to do? No one wants to book us. If you have not been on Drag Race, you don't exist. It really was this moment of like, wait a minute, what are we going to do? I don't have a plan B or anything. This is it.
When you're buried under a TV show that doesn't even recognize your existence, and you're just a blip in the latest big documentary on drag, you gotta keep hustling to maintain that legendary status that few queens like Sherry Vine can claim. But how does she do it?
Today, Sherry Vine joins us to talk about her amazing 28-year career in drag, performing the raunchiest of song parodies, and her secret meeting with other legendary queens where they had to figure out what to do with RuPaul's Drag Race.
Listen as Sherry chats with us about her new show, Hollywood and Vine, where the glamour of 1940s Hollywood intersects with Vine's trashy pop sensibility to create a naughty body show featuring parodies of Madonna, Tina Turner, and Whitney Houston.
Plus, Anna Wintour shades Melania Trump.
And Shawn Mendes tells a fan to come out on their own terms. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello?
Is this Sherry Vine?
Yes.
How are you, Sherry?
Hi.
Hey, are you on speakerphone?
Yeah, do you want me to take it
off?
Yes. All right, hold on.
This is for broadcast use. Emphasis on the broad.
Girl, what do I know?
Make it legendary. People introduce you all the time as legendary, and I'm like, how dare you?
It's a really nice way of saying old.
Stretched
well,
out.
You know, you've been in the business how long? How long? 30 years now?
28 years. This year is 28. So I think legendary. I mean, look, I don't call myself legendary, but if someone else does, I am fucking taking it because it's 28 years. If some 22-year-old bitch from Drag Race can call herself legendary, I think I can too.
Thank you for saying that.
So true. So true.
I haven't seen your fucking faces in so long.
I know.
Like almost 10 years.
It's probably been that long, yeah.
And I look exactly the same today that I did 10 years ago.
Only better.
Yes.
And you look
well, the first time I did your show was right after the Gaga parody, and that was this year. It's 10 years.
Oh, and wow. That introduced the world to Peppermint.
I know. Who's huge.
And now look at her. She's on Pose getting strangled. Spoiler alert.
Did you watch that? That must have been really fun for you as a friend to see your friend get beaten up on television. I mean, even though the circumstances are traumatic and violence against trans people is horrendous, since you have a personal relationship with her, it must have been great.
I mean, of course, I thought that there's so much that I'm proud of with Peppermint. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, she really is like my heart and soul. It's such a dear friend. And I wanted that to happen for her Drag Race so badly, and helped her and she got it, and then it's just like taking it on. She knows she did the Broadway show Head Over Heels. I saw it twice and she was phenomenal, and then Pose, and she's got so much going on. I'm just very happy for her.
I heard she gives good head over heels.
Oh, girl, she gives good heels, that's for sure.
Yeah, you were the first drag queen on the show to talk about her sex life on the podcast. And since then, a lot of other people have come forward as having very healthy sex lives because of their dragness. Because
before you, every drag queen I've ever talked to, like, do you ever pick up a guy in drag? And like, oh no, drag is not sexual. I would never. And you're just like, honey, if it's good, I'm taking it.
Well, I think they're full of shit. No, I'm just kidding. I've talked. There are some girls that say no, and there's some girls that are that do very secretively. And it's like, you know what, honey? I'm making no apologies or excuses. The type of guy that I want to have sex with is interested in the blonde hair and not a middle-aged man with no hair. So, I mean, like, on my body, you know, I've gone on dates with men as, you know, a man, like gay date. And then it's like, I could see why some gay guys don't want to date drag queens. It's like, I've got red toenails, stubbly legs, half an eyebrow. I get it. And I don't need to be in a relationship at this point, honey. I'm like, not even kidding. I said, I want to get fucked and then watch Netflix.
Well, that's what New York is for.
Exactly. Well, I don't live in New York anymore.
You moved to LA.
Honey, she lives in Los Angeles.
In my mind, you're always going to be living in New York.
I know. I mean, I was here 27 years, so.
Well, you were part of this very important documentary that HBO just came out, Wig, short for, it's kind of like shady. Of
you saw me in it? You didn't blink. Okay, gorgeous.
Well, it's a little bit of a shady title because it's an abbreviation of wig stock. And to me, it feels like the producers of the documentary have very good intentions in wanting to capture the drag scene in New York City, but they're also kind of trying to pull away from the importance and legacy of the Wigstock group.
I mean, you're opening a whole other can of worms if we want to talk about that, because I definitely have opinions about it. I mean, first of all, just to close up the peppermint thing real quick, because I didn't want to make fun of trans people getting beat up, but I'm really proud of her for doing that. I thought she did a great job, and her acting was really good. I texted her right after, and I was like, thank you for doing that, because it's really out of control what's happening to especially trans women of color. Mm-hmm. That being said.
But yeah, but at the same time, it's really fun to see your friends get beaten up on television.
And it's an important role, you know?
It just looks like anytime one of our guests gets murdered or strangled or beaten up on television, I always text them. I'm like, finally.
Well, if it's comical or something, then absolutely. Like my friend Mario, who's actually my roommate now Los Angeles, was on, kidnapped and tortured on American Horror Story one season. And I was like, girl. But definitely the scene with Peppermint was hard to watch and it was really brutal.
Well, have you ever had, I mean, I imagine that you actually in real life have had friends who have gone through horrible experiences like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I've been in, thank God I've never been hurt, but I have been in situations where I thought I was going to be hurt. And I had to run. So luckily I didn't get caught. But I mean, I've been chased down the street with guys with baseball bats. Oh, I've had bottles thrown at me.
Audience members wanting their money back.
Oh, well, girl, that's normal. I mean, I can handle that.
No refunds.
Audience members wanting their photo taken with you after you've done the gig and the meet and greet was 3 hours ago.
But yeah, the HBO documentary Wig was not what I was hoping or expecting it to be.
Were you disappointed? Were you still happy to be part of it to some degree?
Both, to be perfectly honest. I was, of course, happy to be like, okay, at least I'm kind of in it. I was disappointed that I thought there would be more footage of the actual event of Wigstock. I mean, the whole reason that Wigstock happened was to film it. It wasn't like, hey, we're doing Wigstock, and then they were like, let's film it. I think it was, you know, it was more, we want to make this documentary, let's do Wigstock. And then when I watched it, there's two different movies, and I get what the director was doing, tying in the old and the new. But if you want to make a documentary about Charlene and Bushwig, then make that one. I just felt that it was two different documentaries, and I get it, but it was really heavy on, like, in my opinion, I watch it and I'm like, oh, it's about Charlene's the star. And it's like, no, Lady Bunny, she's the star. She, I don't think, gets the credit. It doesn't come across as getting the credit of like creating this institution that's been going on for 35 years and the history and the legacy and all the people that have gone and the people that kind of paved the way. It touches on that, but then it's like, I just wanted more. And that day was so glorious. Everybody was amazing.
The day they filmed the festival.
Yeah, the Wigstock day last September. And I was like, I wanted more of that. And, you know, they're like, oh, the music rights. And I was like, well, I mean, I know for my number, I paid to have an original track made of my song. So I handed them a royalty-free song. So it's like a lot, and not just me. I mean, there are tons of people I can name that are legends who not in it at all. So
I'm not in it.
You're not in it. But it's beautiful shot. It's shot beautifully. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of legends in there. There are a lot of legends in there that you just kind of don't see. Like, you see our friend Peaches Christ. She's on there for like in half drag for like half a second. And then
half a second. And there's not a lot of Varla. I mean, there's so many people that I was like, where is so-and-so? It's just like a glimpse. And it's like, oh, that was fast. And even like Bianca was there all day and did so much comedy and everything. And I'm like, almost whittled down to nothing. And but if I look at it subjectively, if I was some gay kid in Missouri watching it, I'd be like fascinated. Mm. It's a good documentary. It's good entertainment. I wish it was a little more heavy on the New York wig stock and then make another documentary about Bushwig.
It's almost to me that there's this shift that's happened that is not necessarily a good one, in that drag and cross-dressing in art and entertainment occurred as almost as a survival mechanism. You know, like we see that very well represented in the TV series Pose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I came of age around that time period. And for us, it's like getting into drag was an act of rebellion. It was an act of survival. It was an act to express yourself against a world where you were mostly invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And having this shift where drag has become a multi-million dollar business for a lot of individuals,
yes.
There's a turf war. You know, we've been interviewing drag queens for 15 years on this podcast and even longer before that. And it was very easy to get guests. It was very easy to work with drag queens. And now there's like a line of 15 people have to approve something.
And, oh, well, yeah. Honey, I mean, like, I get asked all the time, like, what are the pros and cons about Drag Race and how it's affected your life? And I'm like, well, in one way, it's legitimized the art form of drag for sure. And now that people can see a dollar sign to it, it's like every TV show and movie is like, let's get a queen in here somehow. And they have a million followers on Instagram. It's very powerful. But yeah, you're right. It's become an industry. And so there's actually good things about that. And then at the same time, there's, like you said, it makes it a lot less accessible for some of them. And it's a business. But at the same time, it's kind of it's always been a business for those of us who have done it as a full-time job. It's not a hobby. It is a business. So, I mean, I could see the pluses and minuses of it.
So is all this change affecting you positively as an artist?
Well, I hope so.
Well, in the sense that, you know, I remember in the early 90s how hard it was even to get people to come see a show, and you had to pass out cards at a club and put up posters on, mm-hmm. you know, poles and grease.
Well, that
poles.
Has not changed for me. I mean, that might not be the case for Drag Race girls, the TV stars. And no, I'm being like completely honest, not shady at all. But I remember about 5 years ago having lunch in LA, and it was me, Jackie Beat, Coco, and Varla. And we were looking at each other like, what the fuck are we going to do? No one wants to book us. If you have not been on Drag Race, you don't exist. It really was this moment of like, wait a minute, what are we going to do? I don't have a plan B or anything. This is it. And that's when Jackie and I said, let's start doing Battle of the Bitches. Let's start focusing on, let's do the Golden Girls. Let's focus on theatrical stuff, which we are good at, and not club stuff. Maybe that chapter's done. And I think that's, you know, been very, very successful for us. But it really, it's still, you know, sometimes we're like, Jackie and I are like, oh my God, we've got to, it's like, got to keep that wheel turning of like getting people to come and posting and promoting and to fill a 150 seat theater. So that has not changed. I'm not complaining. I'm very lucky. I have a gorgeous life, traveling all over the world, performing, and everything is going great. And it, like I said, it has come back kind of full circle, but there really was this moment where it's like, felt kind of like you don't exist if you haven't been on Drag Race. And luckily there's those queens like Bianca and Alaska and Willem who are super popular, who really make an effort to say, hey, don't forget about these queens.
Well, you guys influence a whole generation of drag queens.
Yeah. I mean, it's just nice to be recognized. They work with us. We did a Golden Girls where we said, asked Alaska to do it. And she was like, absolutely. And it was 2 weeks. I mean, she was making, you know, almost no money, certainly compared to what she normally gets. And Jackie said to her in the dressing room, because it's in the basement of this Mexican restaurant, and she's got to get ready in the corner of this bathroom. And Jackie's like, oh, this must be horrible for you. And she turned around, she's like, there is no place in the world I would rather be right now.
Well, that's so heartwarming.
Yeah, it's great. And Bianca, you know,
she doesn't have a heart, so it can't be warm.
She's the best. And So it's all good.
So you guys are rebooting Golden Girls in August with Jackie Beat, Drew Drogi,
and Sam Pancake. Drogi. Yeah, who's
Sam Pancake?
Sam, you would recognize in a minute because he's been on every TV show as a guest. I mean, Will and Grace and The Office. I mean, he's done so much. If you saw his, look him up and you'll be like, oh, I've recognized that queen.
She looks like a pancake.
I'm friends with him on Facebook.
But Sam and Drew are more like real, you know, like Hollywood TV, film, stage actors. Jackie and I are the clowns. And it all works together. And Johnny McGovern from Hey Queen is our special guest this time.
What's he playing?
Well, it's funny because I wanted him to be Stanley so badly because we haven't done one with Stanley yet.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't want to shave. So, fuck. So like we did Stanley find some other episodes for him.
Like Stanley has to shave?
Stanley can't have a full beard. No.
No.
He's an old man.
And when you guys do Golden Girls, you guys just take the actual scripts from the TV show and just redo them.
Oh my God, that would be illegal.
But I heard that that's what you guys do. I mean, isn't it under, doesn't it?
That would be completely illegal.
Doesn't that fall under parody because you guys are men in drag?
Yes.
For the legal experts out there.
Yes, of course we couldn't do it with the original script. That would be completely illegal. They're really, really stupid and silly and fun and a huge hit, luckily. We've had some really good ones. So he couldn't do Stanley, so we did find two episodes. One is called The Joust, where Blanche gets Dorothy a job at the museum and he'll play the boss. And then the other one is where they all three pose for an artist and Laszlo, and he's playing Laszlo. So they're really, really good episodes that we're parodying, not
doing word for word verbatim.
Well, I imagine for you girls, it's kind of hard to stick to the script.
For some, for Jackie.
Well, just it kind of is begging, you know, to, and that's the thing about drag is that you're sort of like imitating popular culture to some degree, but you're also giving a very satirical twist because, you know, as LGBTQ people, we've been sort of marginalized for most of our lives. And now we're sort of in this weird moment where we're the mainstream. And
it's funny you say that because, I mean, yes, I think that, I mean, of course, I totally agree. It's like on one hand, like the best time for visibility being gay, it's like, it's cool. You know, if you go to a drag show now, it's like mostly women. It's like, it's really changed and that's all great. And then on the other hand, I find you have the anti-gay is also just as strong, like growing and getting stronger and more vocal and more visible. And that makes me nervous. It's kind of like both extremes are rising.
Well, do you get protested outside your shows?
No.
They'd be like, Sherry Vine is not fine.
No, we don't get protested, but I mean, there's been a lot of gay bashings in big cities like New York and LA where I don't think I wasn't as worried. And now I really watch my back, even in New York and Los Angeles.
Well, it feels like the assholes really have been emboldened by
of course.
Happening.
That's exactly what I mean. And not just for gays, for people of color and any Muslim, I mean, whatever. Anyone that's not a straight white man has been given permission to to be, you know, to be an asshole.
Not in Puerto Rico.
No, you're right. You're
right
absolutely
now,
right. They have been given permission
in Puerto Rico right now. And everyone's like, Trump, you're next. Mm. The governor he hasn't resigned yet. I don't know if you've been following this, but
Have. I just read it this morning. He's not going to resign.
Well, he's not going to resign, but he just made an announcement that he's not going to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's stepping down
as the head of his party. So that is a little bit of progress. Of course, the protesters are still there. They're like, we're not going anywhere. 500,000 people, five of Puerto Rico's top music stars are not going anywhere. Like, they're camping out in front of the governor's mansion.
I know. Good. I mean, I hate Trump and the whole administration. I hate the whole kind of reality show train wreck that our government's turned into. I just think it's a circus. And I think that it's the only reason why Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, who hate Trump, are now supporting him is because they're like, okay, look over there at all of that. And then they're doing all the things that they want to do. So they love that he's created this circus, and the focus is on, if the top of the news story is Trump's tweet, it just pisses me off about the news people too. It's like, who fucking cares? Why are you not paying any attention to the fact that Mitch McConnell is completely throwing in the most ultra conservative lifetime judges ever done in history ever? No one is talking about that. We're talking about his dumb tweets. Like, who fucking cares? And they're stripping everything Obama did. They're stripping all the environmental rights. Well, no one's looking. It's kind of like, look over here, this hand, while they're doing all these other things. It's horrible. That's my opinion.
Well, the media is in cahoots, I think. It's, you know, it's this military-industrial complex is coming for us.
Well, Bernie Sanders said it perfectly. He was like, I don't care if it's CNN or Fox. They all have a board. They're all about making money, period. No news organization is doing the news to really report the news. It's a business. Mm.
Well, it stems from having a weak culture, and in some ways, like where we were at the time of Pose, it's really great that Pose is on television right now, I think. And it's like, I love talking about it with people who live through it like you, because, you know, it was the culture that helped us survive AIDS. It helped us survive Reagan. It helped us survive George H. Bush. You know, it helped us survive so much.
Yes.
And I feel like in some ways, social media and television drag culture is, you know, disrespect, but it is weaker culture because it's about consuming something. You know, you go to drag con and people are standing. They're not interacting with each other. They're standing in line on their phones for 3 hours just so they can meet one person to have a photo with them. They're not even having a conversation with that person.
Yeah.
And so part of it is like our whole culture is not talking to each other. We're sort of isolated. We're posting status updates on social media, and we don't go see shows. We don't step out of the house to be part of communities.
No. And if you're going to a show and you're just on your phone or documenting it, you're not experiencing it. It's like, why don't you experience this half hour and then comment on it later? Do you watch Black Mirror?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah.
The best one is with Dallas Bryce Howard. And oh my God, it's so good. And it's perfectly about what's going on right now.
Which one was that?
Where it's all about getting likes.
Oh, yes.
And you can walk past a person and like say, hi, how are you? And they like you. And so it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's the best one.
And if you get enough downvotes and dislikes, they throw you in jail.
Right, yes. Oh, you can't eat here because you don't have enough likes to eat in this restaurant and stuff like that. It's like, oof.
It's happening in China. It's being tested in certain regions. And certainly to some degree, you know, there is a meritocracy of social media credentials. And I've seen that this through our career, and probably you've probably experienced this too, is like when you have just enough followers, despite of the content or quality of your work, you'll get free shit. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Like we know we're doing well when we get free coffee in the mail.
Yeah. I have like a rule where I wake up and I have a cup of coffee, and then for the first hour, I do all of that social media and postings or whatever, and then that's it. And people are always like, did you see my comment, or did you see this post? I'm like, honey, no. I'm not going through threads of Instagram to see what people post. Nothing of, no offense. And if you want to talk to me, call me. I'm not going to sit on my phone and read what people are posting on Instagram, whatever. I go on to post about my show, I'm done.
And your new show, Hollywood and Vine, is touring the country.
Yes! I mean, we just started putting together these tours, and I have one in the States that starts in September, and then I go to Europe in November, and there's several people helping me work on bookings right now, so we're in the process of adding more shows, but it's all on my website. And super excited because it's my first kind of big solo show in a long time. I've been doing so many shows with Joey Arias and with Jackie Beat and performing alone. But usually if I do a club gig or I'm going on tour alone, I usually just kind of like, you know, I come out, I do one costume and it's like, hi, da da da. This is my first song. Now here's my second song and a lot of shtick. And it's a great show, but it doesn't have like a theme or an arc or whatever. And so this is a show that's going to be, has a theme, have a look, the songs are connected. Yeah. Hollywood and Vine.
How'd you work?
That sounds like everything you do though. How is this different though? Is it?
No, it's not. Like I said, yeah. I usually come out and I have, here's my 10 songs and there's no thread that ties mm-hmm. the songs together. There's no theme or look. It's just a comedy show.
Talking and singing.
It's like stand up with songs.
But what's the plot? You got to have a plot.
It's going to be total 1940s Hollywood glam, Hollywood and Vine, but of like the glamorous time of Hollywood and Vine. And it's going to have a bit of an arc, like a cohesive look, costume changes, some video. I'm going to tell a story about, you know, where Sherry, all through, of course, stupid comedy, dumb parodies, but, you know, where Sherry comes from, my connection to Hollywood, where my name, Sherry Vine, comes from, Vine Street. It's not going to be like a story like in the beginning, blah, blah, blah. Not all a lot of dialogue.
Once upon a time, there was a little ugly girl.
Yeah, it's not going to be that. It's going to be very. Mm-hmm. You but know,
you lived on Vine Street, didn't you?
No.
No? Okay. No. I thought maybe. I thought
but the
maybe
name
you
told is
that.
From. No, okay. The name is from Vine Street. There, okay. There was a building called the Sherry on Vine Street that looked like a busted crack whorehouse. And that's where I got the name.
But you used to live. You grew up in L.A. or you used to live there as a
I went to college in L.A. Okay. So I lived there for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And Candace, a million years if I remember ago. Correctly, Candace Cane was your roommate?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God. Candace and I were roommates. We moved to New York together. Now we're all back in LA together.
That's unbelievable that you lived with her.
What a small world.
Oh my God. I have so many stories. Small world. I mean, the gorgeous thing is that, you know, we're all still so close. Me and Candace and Jackie, we all were of the same time and mm-hmm. friends for almost 30 years. It's ridiculous.
That's amazing.
That's a reality TV show I'd watch for sure.
Honey, That's what I always say. I'm like, well, first of all, they need to do a Legends drag race because we would all fucking jump on that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Coco, Varla, Jackie, me, Peaches. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it seems like you're going to have to do it yourselves. You can't wait for RuPaul or World of Wonder to do it because if anything, they're going to try to stop you from doing it.
No, I think World of Wonder would love to do it. I think actually it's VH1 and wants to keep it young.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly, you know, if they're kowtowing to them, you got to find a production company that's willing to stand up for them.
Yeah, we'll see.
You're like, well, you've done so many pilots. I mean, you worked with Here TV for a long time.
Yeah, we did the variety show, She's Living for This, which was my dream come true because it was my Carol Burnett fantasy. Mm. And it actually did really well. It's on Hulu and Amazon now. It's still running and it did so well. And I've been trying to get that rebooted for a long time. And part of moving to LA was for that. So fingers crossed. And working on a lot of other things. Jackie and I started a production company and we've got a lot of wheels turning.
Production company for like live shows, for video?
Everything. Everything. We're live shows, movies, videos, creating and writing other shows for other people.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I always tell people who are struggling with coming up with comedy songs is just write you or Jackie a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they
like,
are.
did you ever finish the parody of Coolio's Gangster's Paradise, Drag Queen's Paradise?
I did, and I performed it a couple times, and I think I need to redo it. It doesn't come across the way I wrote it. It's not so funny. It's more just biographical, and so it's just like not funny.
You're like, I want to be understood, and they're like, now crack some jokes, you whore.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, it really, I thought it was really good, and then I was, after performing it once or twice, I was like, oh, it's not really a lot of jokes, it's just information. Mm-hmm. So I need to revisit that.
What has Drag Queen's Paradise got that Coolio's doesn't?
Oh, honey, if the audience, if they laugh and they're like, oh, I wanted more, then that is the best you can hope for.
And your sex life as well.
Of course, Annie. I had someone come up to me and I was doing a show in like Pittsburgh. It was Pittsburgh. And this guy came up to me after the show in tears and was like, you know, my husband and I lost our home and are unemployed and life is really hard right now. And you made us forget all about that for a half hour. And I was like, oh my God, well, what could be better than that?
Yeah. Is it hard to take some of that in? Cause it's, you know, I heard from some of the Drag Race girls, especially like Sharon Neils, when she first came out, it was like all these fans would come up to me like, I was going to kill myself. And then I saw your performance and now I'm happy.
And then they did kill themselves.
But you know, there's a lot of weird stuff that fans say to people, like even like, you know, the musician Shawn Mendes, right? He's you know, fans are asking him questions and this one woman's like, can you help me come out to my parents as bisexual?
Oh, I saw that.
And
yeah.
He's just like, don't ask me to do that. If I thought that was the better thing to do, I would do it. But your parents are going to love you, so just come out on your own.
Yeah, I mean, it's not appropriate to ask someone to do that. And I thought that his response is good. I mean, we must be reading the same news outlets. I don't get that as much because I don't have that 15-year-old girl fan base that the Drag Race girls do. But I hear a lot of things. And someone last night came up to me after the show and like, oh my God, I first saw your videos when I was 14 and it was the first time I'd ever seen anything drag and gay. And I was like, oh, that's great. I love hearing that.
Well, that's awesome.
You're the first thing that a gay baby sees when it comes out of the womb.
Welcome.
I'm gorgeous. I'm your new mommy.
Did you read about the shade that Anna Wintour threw to Melania Trump?
No, it's good. Tell me.
It's so good.
Oh, tell me that one.
It's so good. So she, Anna Wintour, is being interviewed by Anne McElvoy from The Economist, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Anne starts talking about President Trump's style and say that it's intentionally kind of dumpy. And then she goes on to say, like, well, Melania is much more put together. You know, she came to the UK and, you know, she wanted to be a brand ambassador for British fashion in some cases, you know, and then she asks, do you value that? And then Anna Wintour goes, well, I think First Lady Michelle Obama was really so incredible in every decision she made about fashion. She supported young American designers. She supported designers indeed from all over the world. She was the best ambassador this country could possibly have in many ways. Obviously, way beyond fashion. And the woman's like, yeah, but what about the First Lady now? And she's like...
So, and, Michelle Obama. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, so basically she goes on and like she's just like, well, there's so many women in the government we can talk about. Da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, and she kind of diverted from the answer about Melania a couple of more times. And then finally the woman's just like, well, we just glided, or perhaps it's clear, I don't know, past the question of Melania and where she features in the Vogue world. Do you feel that she's not the right person to feature in the magazine? And Wintour's response was, I think it's important for Vogue to support women who are leading change in this country.
Well, you know, I mean, Melania Trump is probably as miserable as the rest of us. Mm. And I would wager any amount of money that the minute he's done being president, she's gone. There's no question about that. And I'm not sticking up for her at mm-hmm. all. I'm just saying, and you know, for someone who has a high end escort, allegedly, and I'm not putting that down. Some of my best friends are high end escorts. Mm-hmm. That it's just what I hate is all these people that support him despite the hypocrisy. They're so religious and conservative and anti-abortion and all this. And I'm like, you are making excuses for a man who's on his third marriage, who has cheated on every single wife, who has illegitimate, who, can you imagine how many abortions he's responsible for? I mean, thankfully, it's just the level of hypocrisy is so disgusting. Mm. She came to this country under questionable circumstances, and then you're going to come out and try and not let anyone else whatever. Mm. It's all hypocritical. I hate it. So whatever, good for her. Well, I mean, she's going to leave him. She's going to have a gajillion dollars.
Will she? I don't know. I don't know what kind of prenuptial agreement she signed.
Trust me, I'm sure the minute he got elected president, she was like, okay, this is how we're changing that prenup right now, or I'm out of here. You don't think that she's wheeling and dealing? Are you kidding me?
She's
ruthless.
Well, but in terms of fashion, and fashion can be controversial, you know, certainly, you know, Hitler's fashion designer,
Hugo Boss,
thank you,
is seen as still a fashion icon in this world. And they dressed some of the most atrocious monsters in the history of humanity.
Yes, I know. But also Volkswagen. I mean, there's, you know, kind of
the fact that Hugo Boss is still in business says a lot about how much we're willing to put up with fascism and murder.
In fashion.
Well, yes. And then there's that whole, are we guilty for the sins of our fathers?
Mm.
You know, they should have been put out of business the day the war ended. They should
That's
not
right.
Have
I agree
continued.
With that completely.
That's not the sins of your fathers. Mm. That's your sin.
I'm not too familiar with the whole history of these kinds of things. Sometimes it's, you know, when the government tells you have to make these uniforms, you're going to make these uniforms.
That's one point. Yeah. That's,
you know,
but in terms of Melania Trump, it's like her wearing that I really don't care. Do you jacket in some ways, you know, it in terms of fashion, I think it actually is a very bold statement that I would have a hard time seeing an actual first lady wearing something like that. You know, it makes me think of like activists when they wear slogans like Black Lives Matter on their clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, Melania Trump sort of flipping that script and turning it into a fascist statement like, you know, burn the world, put the children in cages. I don't care. And then she trying to spinning that into, well, I'm just fighting bullying.
Well, it's the media.
The media.
Oh, I know.
Bully.
They really care.
I know.
It is a fashion statement. And to, there's a testimony to how strong a drag queen can impersonate her. And you see drag queens all the time. Doing
oh,
really
yeah. Did you see Nina West's video?
Mm.
Nina West, Brooklyn Heights did it on Drag Race.
But I mean, Nina West has a new video out that's about where she's Sarah Sanders. Yes. I'm Kelly Ann Conway. Jackie Beat is Trump, and Aurora is Melania. It's so good.
Aurora does an amazing Melania.
Amazing.
Well, you guys are all fantastic.
And look, you know, I have to say, like, I don't give a fuck what she's wearing. I care that Mitch McConnell is appointing ultra-conservative judges to lifetime positions that no one is talking about. That's what I care more about than what some fucking Melania Trump is wearing.
But the thing that bothers me about the way Anna Wintour talks or chooses not to talk about Melania Trump by omitting her is that she could address a lot of these atrocities. You know, there are women, there are girls in those cages. You know, if her mission as editor of Vogue is to talk about the lives of women, the creative lives of women, choosing not to talk about Melania Trump because it is controversial or harming her business, to me, is part of the reason why fascists have been able to take over.
Well, I guess she's making a statement by not making a statement, because she probably can't really just come out and say what she wants to say. I mean, the same thing. Why would she put Kim Kardashian on the cover of Vogue?
As a fashion influencer. They say if you hate the Kardashians, you secretly hate yourself. Listen, in your latest video that you did where you moved back to L.A., A Whole New World with Mario Diaz, you're flying by a billboard of Angeline, and you go, Angeline, she's still alive.
I know, but I worship Angeline.
Did you see somebody outed her? I think it was like a year ago I read an article, and somebody like really, they tracked down her true identity, supposedly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but she was not having it. She's just like,
honey, I worship her. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, obviously that whole image for Hollywood and Vine of me sitting on the car is just total homage to Angeline.
Because she was doing billboards back when you lived there 30 years ago, right? It's amazing that she's
My God, are you kidding? Totally.
Well, yeah. She's kind of like Pia Zadora, who used to use her father's money to put up billboards all over the place.
Yeah, I don't know whose money she's using. I've never run into her, but I've heard stories of people who have run into Angeline, and they're like, oh, yeah, you run into her in that car, and she pops the trunk open, and like, what do you want to buy? You want a picture? What are you buying? Like, her merch is in the trunk of her car, and she is setting up shop. And I'm like,
oh my God,
yes,
that's amazing.
Girl.
We have to do that.
Well, you know, RuPaul did that for a while in New York City.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because RuPaul's really tall. So he would put up posters. I think Lady Bunny told us this.
In L.A.?
In New York. And Atlanta.
RuPaul is everything?
Is everything. That's like
Diana Ross.
Diana Ross, exactly. And people be like, RuPaul? What's that? You know? And people would talk about it. And they couldn't take down the posters because RuPaul's long arms, you know, put them up. And everybody's, you know, we are just mortals, right? It's like, we're not 7'5".
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Are there any drag queens that you know of or any entertainers besides, you know, Angeline that are sort of like the Pia Zadora school of marketing where they're just like pouring a lot of money into their careers by just making themselves ubiquitous? Well, I mean, brute force, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's, you know, Jackie is so like... Jackie cracks me up because after the show, she sets up that merch, and the minute there's not a dollar, look, she's like, good night, and she is gone. She kind of cracks me up.
Well, I remember
I've seen that.
There was, can I tell you this fight that took place between her and her fans?
Tell me, please.
It's a good story. So Jackie, Peaches, this is the early days of the podcast. We hadn't even met you back then. One of the earliest drag queens we interviewed was Jackie Beat, actually. Peaches Christ recommended her to us, you know? And so Jackie shows up in our studio dressed up as Santa Claus. At Christmas, and it's freezing snow outside. It's snowing, and she's like, God damn it, what the fuck am I doing? I hate this. You know, she's like,
but we picked her up in our beat up, nasty car. I'm surprised she even got into it, and I have to say kudos for that.
She's very sweet. And so we came in, we did this amazing podcast with her. You can listen to it on our archives at feastoffun.com. Little plug there.
Yay.
We get to the gig. So we're like going to the gig with her. She does her show. She stops her show in the middle because people are talking. And she's like, "Will you shut the," you know, and it's always great when Coco Peru or Jackie Beat does that, because it's like, wow, this is exciting.
Coco will do that too. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
And it's so exciting, like, to see a, you know, the righteous outrage of a drag queen calling somebody out on their bad behavior. Then Jackie Beat is doing signatures and autographs after at the end of the show. And she's like, "If you don't buy merch here, I'm not signing it."
Oh, yeah. She's like, "I'm done."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people were just like, "You were yelling at us during the show, so we're not going to buy any merch." Nyah, nyah, nyah. And it was like, it was a standoff.
She called people a bunch of meth heads or something like that.
So it was a standoff between Jackie and her fans. And it was kind of hot.
They're going to lose. You can't win against Jackie.
It was thrilling.
It was one of the most exciting things I've ever been through.
She's right sometimes. God, that's so fucking funny.
That happened, you know, that I don't know if this is more as common now, but it's like for entertainers and celebrities, you could not get a signature from them if you did not buy merch from their table at that spot. So if you brought merch from other events or other things that had done, they wouldn't sign it unless you bought something there.
Well, at DragCon, you can't get a photo or even talk to them if you haven't bought something. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not on that level, so I know that that's the point of it. They're spending a fortune to have a booth there, and I get it. So whatever, I'm not commenting on that. But for me, I'm like, look, you want to buy something? Great. If you want to just have a picture and say hello, that's great. I stay at the venue until the last person is done.
And why not? I mean, you're in this for the people. You're in there to, I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Well, it's then sit late. Down. You know, it's like, I mean, the high heel shoes, Mick Stoll said to me, is that high heel shoes hurt? Wear a long dress. No one's going to notice.
Girl, the feet hurt. After 30 years, my feet are like, bitch, I'm done.
You know, I was talking to flamenco and tango dancers. This might change your life forever. Mm. And they said that the shoes that most drag queens wear are terrible for our feet.
Of course.
But you can wear high heel shoes. They just have to be open toed and made out of fine leather.
Well, honey, I love my drag shoes, but I have gotten to the point now where I only wear them on stage. I used to be like, I would never, ever, ever be seen in public without the heels on. And now I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm in flip flops until I'm on stage.
Yeah. I put on the shoes in front of the audience, do your number, and then sit in a wheelchair and be like, all right.
Yeah. And I just had foot surgery in November.
What'd you have done?
Well, girl, my toes were fucked up from 30 years of heels. I had to have surgery. And now they're completely, it's much better. But I was in constant pain, even just barefoot. I was in pain.
Not even standing.
And she would show me x-rays, and she's like, the heels have literally reshaped your bones, like binding.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah.
Girl. This is called suffering for your art.
Girl, exactly. It's like, you know, no one's supposed to wear those shoes, let alone a 6-foot man.
I don't know how people do it. And when I put on high heel shoes, and I'm like, is it just how much weight I'm putting onto it? Like, what's that? Why is it so painful? Like, I'm a half an hour and I'm just like, I'm done. Like, I just can't do it.
Well, I gag when I see like these 80-year-old women walking around still in not 6-inch hooker heels, of course, but in a heel. And I'm like, oh, I fucking love you. Like, I just want to like worship them, because I'm like, I get it, girl. That woman is in pain and still wearing a heel. Okay. That's like, I get it, girl.
Well, it's like the heel was designed for Cossack horseback riders.
Honey, I don't know. That heel was designed by some straight man who had a fetish of women in high heels.
He liked the heels. Well, it is. It does change how you move.
Well, of course. Oh, and of course, you know, the queens back in the in the day, the fops who wore heels, you know.
That's the thing to me. It's like, you know, I want to move. I want to shake it. I want to dance. And I sometimes feel like the high heel shoes get in the way of that. The padding, the cinching, the tucking. How do you navigate all that?
Oh, honey, I see these 24-year-old queens running around in those heels and jumping around and doing flips and flops. And I'm like, enjoy it now.
I'll see you at the clinic.
I'll see you at the clinic. It's a short window of time that you can do that.
Well, where's your future? Like, are you going to be writing more and sort of producing?
Where's my future?
What's going to happen to you, Sherry Vaughn?
I don't know. I'm living day to day. No, I have so many. There are so many burn. There are so many pots on the stove, honey. Mm. It's there's a lot going on. I mean, do the Golden Girls, and then immediately the next day I leave to go out on tour with Bianca. I'm opening for her on her European tour. And then September, I come back and start the tour of my solo show. And then I go to London to open for Bianca at Wembley for 10,000 people gagging.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And then doing a lot of stuff with Jackie between our live shows. Like I said, I'm trying to get this movie made. I'm trying to get the variety show rebooted. And I can't really say anything yet, but we have been working with a very popular Drag Race queen, writing her new show. And so that's more stuff we want to do, Jackie and I, as part of this production company, is like create a show for these queens. Like, we will write it, direct it, stage it, goodbye. And we're not in it at all. It's just for them. But that's just like another branch of this company that we want to do. And that's happening. So
I'm not going to say any names, but she's busy. That would be the number one most urgent product. And if a queen is wise, you know, if I will just put it this way, if I got on Drag Race, I'd be hiring you.
Well, I agree. I mean, and I'm not even like tooting my own horn. I'm just agree that like, a lot of those girls, you know, come off the show, you're a TV star, son, and you have to have a product, and they might not be equipped to create an hour show. Mm-hmm. And Jackie is a brilliant, no one's going to question that Jackie is the best joke writer. And my strength is in staging and kind of directing, and together we work real. I think it really, we can create from beginning to end a great show that's tailor made for whoever it is.
And Hollywood and Vine is that, and it's coming your way, listeners.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to San Francisco at the Oasis on September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego at Martini's
on the 14th. And there'll be some stuff booked in there just like waiting for it to be confirmed. I'm doing it in LA one of those days in between. It's not confirmed yet. Mm.
And then you're kicking off your European tour by going to Norway.
Yeah, what's confirmed is Oslo, Copenhagen, Helsinki, Reykjavik. I'm waiting to hear looks good for Bergen, Antwerp, and Berlin. So it'll be a big tour. And talking to this other, I just hate talking about things that aren't definite, but there's like a UK tour in the works, and that takes us to the end of the year. And already 2020, I've got quite a few things booked. So,
you know, Mark actually really got on happy. Reality television in Norway. He's a reality TV star.
Really?
Yes, yeah. Not a joke. Called TV show called
Big Brother Norway?
Kind of, basically.
No, really? Oh, my God.
It was. They took 12 Americans of Norwegian descent back to Norway and put us through challenges based on language, culture, and history. And I was filming. I didn't win. I made it to the semifinals, though. But I was there in Norway for 47 days. I spent a lot of time in Oslo, and I really loved it there. And
it's great. Oh, my God. It's fucking expensive.
It's expensive. But, you know, the Norwegians, they make more money than Americans do. So it's not so bad for them.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, some of the places I was just like, well, this is, you know, New York prices. This is Chicago prices. If you were If you were staying in a hotel in New in Chicago, you'd probably spend about the same. And you can get some cheap eats here and there, but you know,
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. I was like, $10 for a latte? What?
You have to get all that stuff included in your rider.
How is your Norwegian?
It's not very good, but they all speak English.
They do. They all speak perfect English.
You know, so you don't have to. I mean, you should probably learn a couple of different things. I know how to say dick and
how do you say dick?
Pika is like we went to this place called
That's easy. Yeah, I like that.
Troll Pekin, which is the troll dick.
It's a rock formation that looks like a dick.
Yeah.
And Mark was making on the show, he was making all these dick puns, which were hilarious. But the women were like, ew, gross. And I'm like, girl, you're no stranger to dick.
I know. Oh, maybe they never had a dick that big, though.
I don't think I've ever had any Norwegian pika.
well you have now is your chance. Now's your chance.
I usually like, you know, Mediterranean Latin kind of.
They do have a lot of foreigners living in there, so you might come up with a Spaniard or somebody from South America.
Okay, that's what she's got to search for. Yeah. Those Brazilians living in Norway.
You like the rich, flavorful undertones of caramel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, girl. Thank you. Exactly.
Rich flavor, tasty, just like Sherry Vine.
I've been someplace in Scandinavia, I was like, oh, honey, these men are translucent.
Yeah, this bitch is white. To, like, Finland, you're like, oh my god, there's like, they're like, there's no color in them at all.
We see the sun for 3 days a year.
Make sure you see Midsummerfest before you go to Sweden, the movie.
Oh, okay, cool. I will.
It's frightening.
Sherry Vine, congratulations on 30 years of being a unapologetic skank.
My poop, pleasure.
With songs about poop just flowing out of you so effortlessly.
Honey, thank you guys for being so supportive for 10 years. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime.
The road may be long and hard, but the destination is all worth it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds like a bowel movement I had yesterday. I will let you know if this show comes to Chicago.
You better bring it to Chicago.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Let me know.
You want to cook with us?
Yes.
We'll promise not to set you on fire like we did to the other queens.
Oh, my God. I don't really eat very much, but I'll come to be polite.
I noticed that. It's like, your body is rocking thin. It's like you're one of the few queens, you know, past a certain age that can wear like a, you know, a midriff. Is that what that's called? A little dress, you know?
Yeah, girl, it is not easy. Let me tell you, trust. Everyone's like, oh, no, no, no. I'm like, it's not natural anymore. That's like not easy. It's
Wait, are you getting lipo?
No.
You're just starving to death.
I go to the gym every single day. I diet. It's a lot of work.
Oh, so you're actually a natural beauty.
No, there ain't nothing natural about it, honey. Oh, natural in that way, maybe. Yeah, it hasn't been enhanced.
Through hard work and exercise. There's no surgical. What is it?
Not yet.
Lady Bunny said, it's like, RuPaul told me she had been Botoxing for years. And I turned to her and said, well, why'd you stop?
When and why?
When and why did you stop?
My favorite is Bunny. I told RuPaul to act her age, and she died.
She disappeared into dust.
Like God, a vampire. I love Bunny. No one's funnier than Bunny.
No one is fun. Well, you're pretty close.
Thank you. I love you guys, and thank you so much.
Take care, darling. Sherry Vine.
You too, baby.
Bye.
Sherry Vine lives in
Los Angeles.
Not on Hollywood and Vine, but her new show, Hollywood and Vine, is coming to a town near you. It kicks off in San Francisco's Oasis, owned by the glorious Heckalina, on September 11th. I heard word that Heckalina will be wearing a paper bag so you don't turn into stone when you look at her.
Listen, I saw a picture of Heckalina like back in her Navy days. She was full on trade.
Yeah, I know. That's why she's so such a people person today.
It's a Navy
experience. Once you get a taste for steak, it's hard to go back. How are you going to keep the boys on the farm when they've been to gay Paris?
It was fun to reconnect with Sherry Vine. It's been a while. She came into the home studio. I feel like she was in full drag, right?
She showed up in full drag one day. It was like...
We probably picked her up and dropped her off at the gig.
Yeah.
We used to do more of that back in the day.
And I was just like, girl, you look so fishy. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm talking to a woman. a woman. A beautiful woman. And mm-hmm. she had her nails and her heels, and she's very much like a Farrah Fawcett 70s secretary aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like chomping on gum and filing her nails. Mrs. Higgins, I need you in my office right away. What? People who are fans of Carol Burnett's show know what I'm talking about. Hey, guys, we want to remind you that Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. We couldn't do this show without your help. We are on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. And if you want to access and listen to our other podcasts with Sherry Vine, Jackie Beat, Lady Bunny, RuPaul, and many of the fabulous entertainers we talked about on the show, you can become a premium member and access 15 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus.
We also have t-shirts and mugs and tote bags and aprons for sale in our store at feastoffun.com/store. And I'll autograph your merch for free.
Yeah, you don't even have to wait in line.
Yeah.
You can do it from the comfort of your own home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll show up to your house and spend the night and eat food from your refrigerator. Hey, do you have any ketchup?
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.